history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you reside in this amazing, wonderful, great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there really are heroes around you, and they come in all shapes and sizes, all ethnicities and backgrounds. And the heroes that we hear from each week here all share one thing in common. They all love our country and their fellow Americans enough to have put their lives on the line. We're here to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that has been paid for our freedom. And in that process, boy, do we learn a lot. We often hear stories that have never been told anywhere else. So we're educated, but also entertained. And so frequently, and I think for me personally, every single time, we are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today, I have the privilege of introducing you to a 97-year-old who still plays the piano and the trumpet and just passed a driving test that'll have him licensed in California till he's 99. He's lived in the U.S. for 40 years and spent the last quarter century in Bakersfield, California. But he first put on a U.S. Army uniform in 1938 at the age of 17. This man has quite a legacy. Eventually, you'll get to hear him share about his 8 children and their families, but none of those kids would have ever been born if he hadn't escaped the Bataan Death March 75 years ago. And the timing of this episode couldn't have worked out any better. This coming Wednesday, October 25th in Washington, D.C., leaders of the House and Senate will preside over a ceremony that a special group of veterans and their families have been waiting for decades, and one they've been looking forward to ever since the bill was first put forth in 2015, finally passed in December of 2016, and now, this coming week, will finally come into fruition. That bill awards the Congressional Gold Medal, the highest civilian award Congress can give, in honor of 260,000 Filipinos who fought for the U.S. during World War II. It's estimated that only a little more than 15,000 remain alive today, and Cipriano Ginto is one of them. Before we get into the interview with Mr. Ginto, I should note that when it comes to these Congressional Gold Medals that have been awarded in recent years to groups like the Tuskegee Airmen, Japanese American veterans, the WASPs, Women Air Force Service Pilots, and others, and that will soon honor those who served secretly in the OSS, precursor to the CIA, when it comes to the Congressional Gold Medal, often it's up to a surviving veteran or his family to come forward to claim that medal. There is a National Veterans Registry for Filipino vets, but it is by no means complete. So as I referenced the gold medal up front here, it hit me that I should put out that call. If you're a Filipino veteran of World War II, or you know one, or even if you know a family of a Filipino World War II vet who's no longer with us, you can follow up to make sure a medal is issued in honor of his service. If you go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, I have a link there to the Filipino Veterans Recognition and Education Project, which can walk you through the necessary steps. I might mention this again later, but I don't want to wait any longer for you to hear the distinct voice of Dr. Cipriano Ginto. The doctor is for dentistry, which he practiced in the Philippines. After coming to the U.S. in 1976, he became an operating room technician. But his first medical experience came in World War II, and it came out of necessity. You'll hear him share how, after so many of the initial medics were killed and wounded, he was pulled into that duty, carrying the wounded on litters to makeshift aid stations. By the time this hour is up, I trust you'll grow accustomed to his accent, that you'll feel his resilient spirit, and there's no doubt in my mind you will not miss his undying love for the USA. But let's go back to the beginning, Dr. Ginto. What was it that made you enlist in the U.S. Army as a 17-year-old in the Philippines in 1938?
I still remember it was Washington Day, February 22.
And why did you do that?
I don't know. It's just a coincidence. I went to the military to enlist. So they sent me to the hospital for medical checkup, everything, and then I was sworn in by the adjutant at the regimental headquarters. I took my oath of office. a private enlisted man. And then started our training in the infantry. I was assigned in Company A, 57th Infantry Philippine Scout U.S. Army. That was in Port William McKinley, Philippines.
What was life like before war, before World War II?
Before World War, yeah. That was 1938, 39, 40, and the war broke out in 1941. I've already 3 years service in the military before the war broke out. And then that was December 8, 1941. I was an active military in the infantry division, the 57th Infantry. The 57th Infantry, they are the one of the foremost infantry, brave infantry to fight in the firing line against the invasion of the Japanese. The Japanese invaded the Philippines, both east and west. We encountered the east invasion. That's Mauban, Quezon, the province of Philippines in Quezon along the coast. We beat them. We encountered them just to delay their advancement to the Philippines, to the mainland, to give time for other forces to go to Bataan, where we are all assembled in Bataan fighting the Japanese military. We are under General Douglas MacArthur, and the Assistant General Wainwright. They are my favorite general. They are nice. General MacArthur took his wife in the battlefield. Then Mrs. MacArthur is with us in the battlefield. The only general who is taking wife to the battlefield.
Because all we ever hear, especially when Bataan comes up.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah? Well, everyone talks about MacArthur leaving and leaving you guys behind. But you're saying when he was there, he actually had his wife with him on the battlefield?
Yeah, the wife is there with us in the battlefield. My goodness, I can't believe that. The only general in the United States is taking his wife in the battlefield.
What did that mean to you?
That's very nice, yeah. Very brave. They are really patriotic, you know. Couple. The most patriotic couple in the world.
A patriotic couple, General Douglas MacArthur and his wife Jean, who refused to leave her husband's side when the Japanese attacked the Philippines. She stayed there with him until that point in March 1942, when the writing was really on the wall. And rather than have his general captured by those Japanese forces that would eventually carry out the Bataan Death March, President Franklin D. Roosevelt ordered MacArthur to leave Corregidor in a risky PT boat escape. Up until that point, MacArthur had insisted he would stay with his men and that his family, Jean and their 4-year-old son Arthur, would stay with him. At the president's order, the MacArthurs were evacuated, and before he left, the general told General George Moore, who was staying behind, quote, "Keep the flag flying. I'm coming back." He would come back. And in a bit, we'll hear in MacArthur's own voice what he said when he did come back. But I want to hear more of Cipriano Ginto's voice. You talked about the MacArthur's patriotism. But what about your patriotism? You grew up in a country that had been under U.S. control since 1898 and the Spanish-American War. But what was it that made you so determined to serve?
I think it is in my blood. I followed the footsteps of my father. My father has been in the U.S. Army before. I just follow his footsteps. It is a privilege to serve and defend my country. That is the reason why I enlisted the military, to defend the freedom of my country. It's a privilege. It's an opportunity to serve. I am proud of that. I thank God about that, for giving me the opportunity, the privilege to defend the freedom of my people. That is my intention in serving my country.
I've heard stories from guys who were there in the Philippines at this time. They talk about the weapons and the equipment that you had, that it might not have been that advanced, that it was left over from World War I, and some of it didn't even work. And then I hear about food and you guys not getting supplies in that way. What did you experience? Did you have everything you needed when you were fighting the Japanese?
I handled the Springfield rifle the 45 caliber pistol. I handle the 30 caliber. Those are the weapons that I handle during the battlefield. But then later on, during that war in Bataan, I was assigned in the first aid medical station. I was assigned to be a litter bearer to get all our, to collect all our casualties in the firing line. We use the litter to collect all those injured, all those casualties. It's really hard. Most of our caregivers there, first shot, you know, were killed. And I'm thankful that I survived and to collect the casualties of our troops. Yeah, so we have our doctors. We are nurses behind the battlefield where we collect all the casualties. And they were given a first aid treatment there. So I'm proud to save their lives.
Yeah, you did save lives. And your life was spared. And you have 8 children that are thankful for that. And they've had impacts in the medical profession. But so you're there. You mentioned being on the east side of Luzon when the Japanese attacked. But just as your forces there were being pushed back, American forces all over the island were being pushed back. There are no reinforcements, no air support, no supplies, and it turned into a really desperate situation.
During the war, we were pushed to the Bataan Peninsula. All military, U.S. Army, everything, they are all in Bataan. Until the time we, from January to April, fierce fighting. So we have a lot of casualties, and the Japanese have a lot of casualties too. But unfortunately, we were, you know, under. We have no more airplanes. We have no more bombs. Japanese have that. So we were forced to surrender April 1942. And then all the soldiers were taken prisoners. That is the time when they started the death march from Bataan to Camp O'Donnell. It's about 30 miles walk. That is the death march. Thousands and thousands of Filipinos and Americans walked through that death march. But in my case, we, our commander, Captain Jackson, told us, you are here from the Philippines. If you can, if you have time to escape, to escape from the death march, you can do it. So I formed my group. I was in charge of that group, and then I told them, let us go and escape, live or die among our members of my group. I formed that group to escape the death march. So we escaped the mountains for weeks. We escaped the death march. Thank God that we were able to survive that escape in the mountains until we reached the down the ocean, until we hired those people across Manila Bay. And then we went home peacefully in our home provinces, in our respective places.
I've got a few questions about that. One, even before the death march, I know this is a long time ago, but I want to understand how it happened and what it was like. So you sign up for the Philippine Scouts in 1938. You're serving for 3.5 years before the Japanese attacked the Philippines. Did you know they were going to attack? Did you expect them to attack?
No, we don't expect that. We don't expect the Japanese to come. We fought very hard. But then, before the surrender, I remember General MacArthur left us. We left for Australia. So General Van Rye took over his command. There was an announcement that General MacArthur will go out and General Van Rye will take over until the time of surrender. When we surrender, MacArthur is already in Australia together with our president, president of the Philippines, President Quezon, Manuel Quezon, was with him. I don't know why he went to Australia. Until the time when he comes to liberate, when in the time came to liberate us in 1945, he organized military, all military forces in Australia. That's what we knew. That's what he told us. So we are fortunate that You came again. In 1945, we were liberated. So we were under Japanese government for 3 years.
Did that bother you that MacArthur left and left you guys there?
I don't know. Why he said, we are worried why he left us. But then he left us for good until the time he liberated us.
Yes, I shall return were General MacArthur's famous words. Return he did in October 1944 with the cameras catching him wading ashore in Leyte. In fact, it was 73 years ago this week, October 20th, 1944, when that famous scene unfolded. And if you go to that very spot today, you'll find seven statues, double life-sized, in a pool of water with markers in English and Filipino. MacArthur is the focal point, of course, but the previously exiled president of the Philippines is also depicted at that MacArthur Leyte Landing National Park, as are three other generals, a sergeant, and CBS radio correspondent William Dunn. A nearby museum holds the text of the speech MacArthur delivered there, a speech that he read into a portable radio set to be transmitted across the Philippines, where the fighting would continue on for months. And here is what millions of Filipinos, including Cipriano Gento, our guest today, heard from the general 73 years ago.
This is the voice of freedom, General MacArthur speaking. People of the Philippines, I have returned. By the grace of Almighty God, our forces stand again on Philippine soil, soil consecrated in the blood of our two people. We have come dedicated and committed to the task of destroying every vestige of enemy control over your daily lives and of restoring upon a foundation of indestructible strength the liberties of your people. At my side is your president, Sergio Osmeña, worthy successor of that great patriot, Manuel Quezon, with members of his cabinet. The seat of your government is now therefore firmly reestablished on Philippine soil. The hour of your redemption is here. Your patriots have demonstrated an unswerving and resolute devotion to the principles of freedom that challenges the best that is written on the pages of human history. I now call upon your supreme effort that the enemy may know from the temper of an aroused and outraged people within that he has a force there to contend with no less violent than is the force committed from without. Rally to me. Let the indomitable spirit of Bataan and Corregidor lead on. As the lines of battle roll forward to bring you within the zone of operations, rise and strike. Strike at every favorable opportunity. For your homes and hearths, strike. For future generations of your sons and daughters, strike. In the name of your sacred dead, strike. Let no heart be faint. Let every arm be steeled. The guidance of divine God points the way. Follow in his name to the holy grail of righteous victory.
General Douglas MacArthur, October 20th, 1944. We're going to catch a break, but there's much more to come with 97-year-old Cipriano Ginto of Bakersfield, California. How exactly did he make that daring escape? What was he up to between that moment and the liberation of the Philippines? And yes, even at age 97, he still plays the trumpet like he once did for the 57th Infantry Regiment Band, and he also plays the piano. We're going to hear one of those instruments before we're done, and you can check out the video and, of course, some photos at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We'll be right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU. CECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 800 veterans have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.
This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 97-year-old Cipriano Ginto of Bakersfield, California, a native of the Philippines, where at the age of 17, he enlisted in the American military, assigned to the 57th Infantry Regiment, Philippine Scouts. He's one of more than a quarter million Filipinos who served in U.S. forces during World War II, but one of only about 15,000 still alive today. As a group, they'll be honored with the Congressional Gold Medal next week in a long-awaited ceremony in Washington. But waiting and enduring is nothing new for Dr. Ginto. He survived more than 3 months of fighting leading up to the mass surrender of surrounded U.S. forces ahead of what would become the Bataan Death March, an atrocity which thankfully he escaped, and we'll get into how he escaped and what kind of danger he faced, how weak he became without food during that time. But even after escaping and reuniting with his family, he had to endure nearly 3 more years of Japanese control of his homeland, hoping throughout that he wouldn't be found out as a U.S. soldier. We'll jump into that soon enough, but what about those months of fighting before it all came to a head in Bataan? You start out as an infantryman, they end up making you a litter bearer, and I imagine that those times had to be horrifying, exhausting, chaotic. What can you tell us about those first few months of the war for you?
Oh, we have a lot of casualties. Before we surrendered, we had lots of casualties until the time that we were forced to escape. Mm-hmm. That is the time they organized the death march.
Were there ever times where you thought you were going to be one of the casualties?
No. No casualties in my group, no. But in our company, lots of casualties. And during the escape, lots of soldiers are escaping in the mountains. They are being shot during their escape. They're being shot. We are running. They are being shot. Lots of us were killed during the escape. From the time we escape until we reach the lowland, it is 2 weeks. 2 weeks, it's running across several mountains, you know, without food, without water. It took us 1 week without food. Oh, we are so weak without water. We saw them in the marsh. We are overlooking them. We are at the mountain. We are overlooking thousands soldiers. With guard, Japanese guard, you know, walking in the street. So we just hiding ourselves. Oh, it's really terrible. That's good. We were not caught, you know. Thank God that we survived. Yeah. Difficulties, sacrifices, you know. It's just hard. We have money. Each of us have money. I thought that we combine all those money for our escape, have thousands. Genuine money, that's Philippine money. Outside in Bataan, they are already using Japanese money. Mm-hmm. Ours is genuine money, US dollars, the Philippine peso. Yeah, I collected all their money, those 8 people, to use them in our escape. When we reached the bay area, Manila Bay, we hired a big boat. We charge thousands of pesos each head. That's good. We have our money I collected. We have enough funds to pay the boatman. Yeah. But we were told to lie down their boat. All of us 8 lie down. When they see there are searchlights in the bay, they won't see anybody in the boat. Yeah. We are lying down. So a lot of escape in the boat. That were shot during the night time.
In the boats, like you were?
Yeah, in the Manila Bay. Uh-huh. Lots of them, they were shot. But we survived those trips. The boat took us around 4 hours to cross Manila Bay to our place. Thank God that we survived the Manila Bay escape.
Well, it sounds like there are a lot of moments where it could have been the end for you, where you could have been killed, including the march. Do you ever wonder that? Do you ever think, what would have happened to me if I had stayed on the march and marched all the way to Camp O'Donnell?
Oh, if I would be there? Yeah. Oh, I think I'm sure I will not survive. I will die of diseases like dysentery, malaria. Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, lots of soldiers died in there. I think if I were among them, I will die there. I have no chance. I'm already weak during this game. How much more if I joined the death march? I think I cannot longer endure that. Yeah, I will die. A lot of my friends, my relatives who were concentrated, they all died in the concentration camp. So I'm glad. I thank God for surviving those.
And even today, no one knows exactly how many people died on the Bataan Death March. Generally, you'll hear 10,000, some say as many as 18,000 of those American and Filipino prisoners. And of course, many who survived the march would end up dying in captivity. You lost friends and relatives, as you said, but that would have been you if you had not been told to escape, if you didn't make it away, if you had been found in those 2 weeks surviving unarmed, a whole week without food, until you made it down to Manila Bay and hired the boat to take you to the opposite shore? Or what if searchlights had spotted you laying in the bottom of the boat? If any of those things go differently, you're a dead man. You never get married. None of your 8 children are ever born. There are a lot of aspects of this that I want to explore, but let's start with this decision to escape in the first place. Here's this giant mass of surrendered troops, 76,000 of you, and your commanding officer tells you, as Filipinos who might be able to blend in somehow and avoid being recaptured, he tells you to take off, to risk your lives and making a run for it, right as what would become one of the most infamous war crimes, the Bataan Death March, right as it's starting. I'm just thinking that that in itself was such a critical moment, the decision to take that chance.
My commander said that you people, try your best. You are from here, try your best to go to your respective homes to see your families. Don't worry about us, the American told us. We will be concentrated. They were all taken prisoners. We were all crying, you know. We were dismissed without any firearms. He took out our uniforms. We are all crying. Yeah. And the American, our officers also said, they give us advices to take care of yourself. We were all dispersed, you know, everybody, before the march began.
And what happened to him, your captain, who told you to escape?
They went with the group. They were, because the Japanese came, they were all taken prisoners. Nobody escaped.
Did he survive in prison camp? Do you know if he lived through the...
We did not hear about them anymore. They were concentrated. All the Americans then were concentrated at the university camp, University of Santo Tomas. Uh-huh. There is a big camp there. They were all concentrated there. And all the Filipinos, everybody there, Philippine Army, U.S. Army, they are in Camp O'Donnell. In Tarlac.
So you never found out if that captain made it out alive?
No, we did not hear about them anymore. It was already Japanese time. Yeah. I don't know if they came to be alive or not, you know. Yeah. We did not see any of them anymore.
But his name was Jackson, was that right?
Captain Jackson. He's a guy, service company, 57th Infantry.
I'll look it up.
Our colonel, our regimental commander then, is Colonel Sevilla. Colonel Sevilla, yeah, these are my discharge papers.
Well, when you think about that...
It's hard during Japanese time for years, you know, before deliberation. We have a lot of hardship. 4 years during Japanese occupation. Yeah. People are starving. Everything is not in order.
What were you doing that whole time?
I was trying to buy and sell like things. But then during deliberation, I still serve. We reported back to the general, to the Liberation Army.
Right, that's in 1945 you're talking about, after MacArthur has returned, after all that territory, inch by inch, has been taken back by Allied forces. But I started to ask about Captain Jackson and what he did for you, knowing that he would not be able to blend in the way you Filipinos might. And you said you were crying as you took off your uniforms and prepared to fall out and make a run for it. At one point, you said you saw others who were shot while doing the same thing you did. But you did get away into the mountains, and that order from Captain Jackson saved your life. You're not sure what became of his life, whether or not he died in captivity, but here you are, and we'll touch soon on what you've done in all these years since. But take us back there again, April of 1942. If they find you, you're a dead man, but you have this group of 8 Philippine scouts, now dressed as civilians, trying to avoid capture and make it back to your families. But you're separated from the coastline by this very road on which thousands of Americans and Filipinos are going to meet their demise. You're watching the Bataan Death March unfold, but you're unarmed, helpless to do anything about it. You're also starving and weak and waiting for an opportunity. I don't think any of us can fully grasp what that experience must have been like. But can you take us back there and try to put us in your footsteps?
We waited till the march ended. When the march, at the end of the march, then we tried to escape to the ocean. We crossed the street where the march was by.
Yeah.
We crossed that street at the end of the march. When we see that it's already clear and no more Japanese soldiers there, one by one, run from the mountain to the ocean, one by one. We don't run all together. We are eight. You go. I said, you go. Then they run up to the ocean. No soldier. Then I watch carefully whether there are some Japanese soldiers, you know. Then I told them, oh, you next. Run. One by one. Until I was the last one to run. To meet them and the seashore. So that's the way we escaped.
I'm just imagining myself in your shoes. If I were there, I would have been pretty nervous or pretty scared running across that road. You've seen all your friends make it, but you're the last one. Was that a scary feeling to go out there and make that run? Were you nervous or scared or looking around everywhere?
Oh, yes, of course we are scared. You know, we are nervous. We are all sick. Yeah. Very weak. You know, 1 week escaping, we are so weak. You know, yeah, I thought I cannot survive those moments.
But you did survive, even that nerve-wracking boat ride across Manila Bay, making it back to your native Makabebe, just east of the Bataan Peninsula. And in 1944, while still under Japanese occupation, and for you personally still living in the shadows, you decided to get married? What unusual circumstances to tie that knot under.
We have nothing to do there, you know. Everybody, no school.
Yeah.
We have lots of friends, so we decided to marry.
I guess I just imagine that you don't know how the war's going to end yet. I mean, wasn't that kind of an uncertain future that you and your wife were going into because you're still controlled by the Japanese?
We are not working, so we just depend our living from our parents. They are farmers, you know.
Maybe you can tell us this. Since you lived for 4 years under Japanese occupation, and then you saw your country liberated again, what was the difference? Why are you so thankful for the liberation?
It's a big difference, you know. During the Japanese time, everything is limited. Everything is under military control. You have to salute them. You have, you know, no job for the people. But during the liberation, people became active. They were given jobs, you know. They work in the military, civilian employees in the military. Very nice. It's a big difference. Life changes from poor to well-to-do. Yeah, we are doing well during liberation. We love the American people. The people love the American people. They came back to school. Education, during Japanese, nothing.
And during the Japanese occupation, if the Japanese had found out that you were in the Philippine Scouts, what would have happened to you?
Oh, there are lots of casualties there. If they know somebody serving the military, they are wanted and they will kill them. They punish them. It's good I was hiding nobody. There are some Filipinos who are spying too, telling for money, telling Japanese, that guy from U.S. military, that guy from, they pick them up. I was hiding in the country. They keep me.
Yeah. Wasn't that hard, though? Wouldn't you be living in a constant state of fear that they're going to find you or they're going to capture you or kill you if they find out who you are?
Yeah, I am afraid of to be found out, because if you they will found out, you will be taken prisoner. You'll be punished.
Or killed, like you said. But we're so thankful none of that ever happened. We're thankful you made it through. And when we come back, we're going to hear about the impact of that destiny, what Dr. Ginto has done over the last 7 decades that leaves so many feeling so thankful he survived. If you want to see what this resilient 97-year-old looks like, head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. You'll even find a video of him playing the piano, which, by the way, is what you're hearing in the background right now. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
From sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Two years ago, when I landed on your soil, I said to the people of the Philippines whence I came, I shall return.
Those famous words of General Douglas MacArthur, spoken in that case from Australia, just before those words would be fulfilled with his return to the Philippines. We've heard some perspective on that today from 97-year-old Cipriano Ginto of Bakersfield, California, who had already served in the U.S. Army with the Philippine Scouts for nearly 4 years by the time the Japanese attacked in December 1941. He's one of about 15,000 surviving Filipino veterans of World War II, a group that'll be honored this coming week with the Congressional Gold Medal, the highest honor Congress can bestow to civilians. And the legacy of the Philippine Scouts is as much about what did not happen as it is about what did happen. By their valiant stand on the island of Luzon for 5 months of combat until Bataan fell, with casualties mounting while supplies dwindled, and you heard how Dr. Ginto ended up being pressed into duty as a litter bearer. The work of the Philippine Scouts, and specifically his 57th Infantry Regiment, which received not one but two presidential unit citations during this time, had a big effect on the big picture of the war. It slowed the Japanese advance and kept those enemy forces from invading Australia or New Zealand, keeping those areas safe for MacArthur and the Allied leadership to direct that series of island-hopping battles that would eventually create victory in the Pacific. And then his signature return to those shores of Leyte. So the Philippine Scouts carried out great strategic significance, and it came at a heavy, heavy price. You heard how Dr. Ginto, then 21 years old, escaped into the mountains with a group of 8, avoiding the horrific reality of what would become the Bataan Death March. He lost friends and relatives on the march, but he survived for 2 weeks without being caught, crossing the road only after those 75,000 prisoners had been marched through toward Camp O'Donnell. The escapees hired a boat to carry him across Manila Bay on one wild night, with searchlights representing an ever-present threat of discovery. His parents were shocked to see him again, but he lived the next 3.5 years in a constant fear of being found out by the Japanese forces who still controlled his homeland. With the liberation of the Philippines in 1945 came the chance to step back into the open and once again put on that uniform he had been ordered to take off in a life-saving twist when the death march began. After more than 3 years in the shadows, what was that moment of liberation like for you?
We were told to report back. to the military. So we reported back to the military until I served another Johan Nanyer in the army, in the U.S. Army, 7th MP Battalion, Military Police Battalion, where I served for 1 year until I got discharged in June 30, 1946. Liberation 1945, I reported back to the military control. My wife then, I got married then already. During my Japanese time, I got married. When I reported back, I'm then newly married. My wife's idea is to get discharged and pursue my studies in the college. So I got the privilege of getting the GI Bill of Rights to pursue my studies in the college until I got my degree, Doctor of Dental Medicine. Just in 1950, I started my practice. I became a dentist after the liberation. God bless me for that. I was very active in my dental practice. The U.S. government gave me all the equipment, education, fees, books, equipments, dental clinic. He provided me all the dental. I started my profession. Fortunately, I was successful.
And that helped you put all 8 of your kids through college, and eventually you came here to the States in 1976. But none of this ever would have unfolded if you didn't survive those unbelievably challenging times in the 1940s. And I don't know if you can pick one, but I'm just thinking about it. From fighting the Japanese as an infantryman when war came to the Philippines, to carrying out the wounded on litters, seeing friends wounded and killed, the dark days that led up to that mass surrender in April 1942, your escape from the start of the Bataan Death March, those 2 weeks of hiding in the hills before making your break from Manila Bay and crossing to reunite with your family, the 3 years that followed until the liberation of the Philippines. Any one of those things seems like more than I could handle. But of all of that, of all those things, what was the most difficult thing that you had to face? Which part was the toughest for you to endure?
The most difficult thing is that we are hiding. We are hiding. Most of the time we don't show up, you know. Almost hiding, all worried about our life, you know. We have no work. Our family is trying to hide us. That is the hardest thing during those years. No, nothing at all. We don't work. We just hide, you know, waiting for the liberation, waiting for the Americans. But we didn't know that the Americans will come as soon as that time in 1944.
Well, that had to be a good feeling when they did come.
When they come, oh, we were all happy. The Filipinos were, you know, woke up and joyful. They are all joyful, you know, that General MacArthur came with the president of the Philippines. Ambassador Romulo, the ambassador of America, with him, they landed in Leyte, October 1944.
Do you ever think about all the Filipinos and the Americans who died during the war, and especially on the march? Do you ever think about those who didn't make it?
Oh, yeah, lots of Filipinos, my relatives, my friends, yeah, who have died during those days up to now. They are still in my heart. My cousins, my uncles, all my friends, they died in the concentration camp. Up to now, they are in my mind, you know. I worried about that. At night, sometimes I think of them.
How should they be remembered?
Oh, they are very nice people. They are all educated, you know. So right now, all my friends that survived, those 8 people with me, they are all gone. They all died now. I'm the only one survived now. I'm old, so I thank God for that, giving me this life. Yeah. I'm now, what do you think? I'm old, am I?
You don't look 97, but I heard
just
you're 97.
Just last Monday, I thank God, just last Monday. My driver's license expired last September. They give me an extension. And then I was called to take driving test last Monday. Oh, thank God. The instructor told me, All right, Mr. Ginto, you pass. I'll give you another 2 years. Oh, thank you so much. I celebrate by myself.
But we'll have to keep our eyes out for you on the streets. Yeah.
Before the lady said, gave me a limitation for my driving. Don't drive in the freeway, just locally, said. Yeah. But then last Monday, the man asked me if I drive in the freeway. Yes, I drive. I said, where do you go? I go to L.A.
I don't know if any of us should drive in L.A.
I was so happy. I'm glad. And my children congratulated me, all of them. I never think that I will be given another 2 years driving. Yeah. Just imagine 2 years, I will be 99 then.
Then you might as well go for 100.
My mother died at the age of 104. I want to follow her age.
You mentioned your children. Have you ever thought, what if I didn't escape the death march? Those 8 children would have never been born?
If I did not escape, I was not able to escape.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I'm not living right now.
So your children wouldn't be here.
We will not meet each other anymore.
I would have really missed out. And you're very proud of your children. Tell me about your 8 children.
Yes, I'm very proud. I thank God. In the first place, I thank God for giving me the privilege and opportunity to serve and to defend the freedom of my country. I thank God for that. I hope He may bless me now and forever. Thank God for that. I'm still alive. I'm still strong. I pray that I will live longer, stronger, happy, healthy, with energized person. I want to live for the rest of my life with happiness, see beautiful places, live with beautiful people, live in a beautiful world. I ask God to enjoy the rest years of my life. That is my dream. And when I die, I pray that I will be buried in a military way. I am prepared to die. I have my own lot in the cemetery. I ask God that I will be buried in a military way. That is my dream. I ask God, I ask you, everybody, to pray for me and achieve that dream. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm sure that'll happen, but hopefully not too soon. How many of your children are doctors?
Right now, in my family, my children, my son-in-law, my daughter-in-law, my grandchildren, I have 10 doctors in my family. I have 4 dentists, 3 nurses. I have 2 engineers and architects. And I have some accountants, business administration, and so on. Oh, many. I'm proud I have 10 doctors, medical doctors. My family.
I saw a picture from the honor flight. What was that like for you to go to Washington, D.C. with honor flight Kern County?
I'm an honor flight. Yeah. So we went to Washington, D.C. Oh, it's really very, very memorable. Beautiful. Veterans Memorial there. I read all the names of casualties, the veterans, especially the Vietnam veterans. 58,000 names printed in there. I see President Lincoln. We went to the Capitol. It's a memorable experience trip.
Was there one part of it that held the most meaning for you? Did you have a favorite moment from that trip?
That trip? Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, I have. I have experienced meeting all those people. The mayor now? Yeah, she congratulating me, meeting me when I came back. They are all congratulating me. And they give me an honor here. They give me another service medal. It's really a rare opportunity.
Is there anything else that I haven't asked you about that you think people should know? That you think people should know about the Philippine Scouts?
Well, the Philippine Scouts are well known. The best Filipino soldiers ever. to join the U.S. Army. And they were the first Filipinos to be organized under the U.S. Army, especially in our town during the World War First. They are the first Filipino to be inducted in the U.S. Army.
So is that like your father?
Yes.
Your father was
My
one of them?
My father is one of them. I think the most reliable, the most, you know, trusted. That is why they choose those people from my town, Macabebe, when the American defeated the Spanish.
Like 1898?
Yeah, 1898.
Yeah.
They organized U.S. Army. Yeah. They were taken. They took those people from Macabebe. I'm proud of that. I followed their footsteps.
When you see the American flag, what does that flag mean to you?
Oh, I love the flag. A flag that served me, that gave me all the opportunities, the best in life. When I joined the military, we have only 48 stars. Now it became 49, became 50. I'm proud of that. I am enjoying my life. Yes, since I came here in America, I enjoy every opportunity here in America. I'm happy.
How long have you been playing the trumpet?
Oh, yes, I try to play my trumpet once in a while. I play my piano. Music is in my mind. I want to be happy. Music is the source of my life. Because of music, I was able to attain my education, my military service. Play trumpet in the military band. And I played the lyre, you know, out of the lyre parade. The Grand Major is ahead of me, and I follow him, the lyre. Then the band follows me. That is how we do it every 4th of July. Before the Japanese, we always do that every 4th of July. Even during the granting of independence of the Philippines, I was there. The American flag down, raising the Philippine flag down. I was there with the High Commissioner Macnat. American Commission in the Philippines. I remember I was there.
If there's anything else that you want to say, I'm listening, but I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country.
All I want to say now is I thank my our Lord to giving me all these privileges and opportunities to spend the rest of my life with happiness, enjoy my life here in America. And I am happy and honored to serve and defend this country that I love, the people that I love. I'm proud to serve you and defend you, all the freedom of my people. So I thank God. I hope our God will bless me for the rest of my life. I need your blessing, O Lord, now and forever. Thank you.
Thank you, Cipriano Ginto, 97 years young. And we'll bring the program to a close today with a little more of him on the piano. You can see the video of him playing at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And when the news cycle covers the Congressional Gold Medal Ceremony this week in Washington, honoring all the Filipino veterans of World War II, I hope you'll think of Dr. Ginto and that inimitable spirit he shared with us today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more that freedom is not free. Spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.